October 27th, 2025. Welcome to part two of This Week in Waukesha, the podcast series brought to you by Civic Media in cooperation with WAUK Radio, 540 AM and 100.3 FM. I am your host, Don Brown, and joined by my faithful producer, the mighty Max Martinson, and my guest tonight. If you're just tuning in, make sure you check the first segment. This is college baseball writer Patrick Ebert of D1Baseball.com. That's D, the number one. D as in Don, the number one, baseball.com. And we were talking baseball memories and favorite teams. And Patrick passed the, the litmus test of naming the starting lineup for the Big Red Machine.
Mostly, yes.
So, and I think the only one, Cesar Geronimo was the only one that you couldn't. But once you figured out that Ken Griffey Sr. was in right field, you knew that George Foster was in left field. So, you know, hats off. I mean, you could say that's easier because of all the Hall of Famers from that starting lineup. And now that come back into baseball posthumously, I think it won't be long before he's inducted into Cooperstown. I'm biased there, of course. Him and Shoeless Joe Jackson actually have both been. What are your thoughts on that, anyway?
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. I personally think they should just open it up. I don't like that they, you know, the steroid era. You know,
yeah.
they're kind of making their stance with that too. And I still talk to people who strongly believe, and I'm sure there's people that listen to this podcast that strongly believe that anyone that was associated with steroids should not be admitted into Hall of Fame. But I guarantee you there are people in the Hall of Fame that have taken steroids. I think there's a lot of people. I don't think people realize how rampant steroids were during that time, you know, and I'm not saying he did, but like, what if someone told you that, like, one of the greatest players of probably my younger generation, like, what if someone said Cal Ripken Jr. took steroids?
Yeah.
You know, I think everybody would be like just shocked. That would be like Lance Armstrong with the whole bicycle thing and that scandal that happened.
That was unfortunate.
And I'm not saying Ripken did, but I'm just saying it was running so rampant at the time.
Yeah.
That there were way more players that were taking steroids that weren't. And and I just think now that we're far enough past it, I think you have to open the door. There were too many great accomplishments that occurred during that time. And, you know, I was just refamiliarizing myself with Barry Bonds statistics and accolades the other night. And I mean, he won 7 MVP awards.
Yeah.
And he was an incredible hitter before, you know, it was obvious when he went from Pittsburgh to San Fran. I mean, he went from a fairly slender 80s looking ball player to this massive behemoth of an athlete.
Same with McGuire and Sosa. Like, I
remember McGuire and Sosa. They were all
those little scat catch for the White Sox and the Cubs. Yep. He looked like the guy that if there was a fight, you'd want him in because he was, you know, he was so bulky and huge. But I think there are some people that say if you look at A-Rod's record before steroids, if you look at Bonds' record before that, those would still be Hall of Fame worthy numbers. And then there's another school of thought that I believe that baseball knew McGuire, Sosa, all these guys were using steroids.
Oh, I mean, how could you not
know? But I think based on a fall from grace after that strike that canceled like the 93 or 94 season. And
94.
And I remember I was living in Chicago at the time and I was surprised that White Sox Nation didn't burn the city down because they had a team that was primed to go all the way. And Jerry Reinsdorf was the one that pretty much ushered in the strike instead of fighting for his kid, you know, fighting because that was a great team. But the whole season was canceled. And so I think, you know, there are a lot of stories about the ball being more juiced up. And, of course, well, some of the players that I think because baseball needed this shot in the arm, like with, you know, a few years later when you had the chase for Roger Maris's record between McGuire and Sosa that, it seemed that MLB leadership was willing to look the other way because of all the great things going on that brought people back to the park. What are your thoughts on those?
I have no doubt. Like, there is zero doubt in my mind that baseball intentionally looked the other way and allowed that to happen for the exact reason that you said. You know, like, the MLB had a big black eye since 94, and And they're lucky that that happened in 98, you know, because that probably would have been a lot more prolonged without something like that to get people back and invested and ingested in the game. And I mean, I remember being at, again, County Stadium and being able, you know, I that was 98. I think that was the first year the Brewers were in the National League. So like we were we were getting the Cubs and the Cardinals here, and we were watching Sosa and McGuire home runs, and so it was fun just to be part of it locally,
right?
Know, even if the Brewers weren't in any postseason race or anything like that, but yeah, it was they needed that at that time, and really they rode that then for quite a few years. And that's why I think, you know, it's a part of the history of the game. And that's why I think those players should not be blacklisted. I think they should be into the Hall of Fame. We have the Veterans Committee, which is doing great work. I mean, again, sticking local there, that's the group that got Ted Simmons in the Hall of Fame. And if you look at guys like Carlton Fisk, Gary Carter, you know, all these 80s catchers that already made the Hall of Fame, Ted Simmons' numbers were right up there with all those guys.
Yeah.
And so he was justly brought in. So
talk about a guy that was born at the wrong time, because there were so many great catchers from that era.
Right.
When you think of like Bench and Munson and kind of some of the names escape me now, but there was quite a few that there was a great debate over who the best catcher was, when I think there were at least a half a dozen. Hall of Fame. And of course I can't remember now. Yeah, I mean Lance Parrish was good, and
and that was just before Pudge Rodriguez came up. I mean, that was late 80s, early 90s, so
yeah, you know, Cardinals, it seemed like they always had the Reds number in the divisional play, but the Reds had the better overall record and always like seemed to outlast the Cardinals, and Bench got to, you know, pursue that glory of going, you know, playing in the National League pennant and playing in the World Series. And fortunately, when Simmons was at St. Louis, he, I think, never got to go. He gets traded to Milwaukee, and then he loses to St. Louis. Poor guy. So, but he really was an amazing catcher. He was definitely right up there in that conversation with all those great, great number two men, as we like to call them. So yeah, I think you'll appreciate this too, Patrick. Like when my daughter's team's playing, for all but like 1 year, I broadcast all the games. And the app we use is called Game Changer, which you might be familiar with. And one of our dads figured out how to broadcast audio using your earbuds. And it's been a lot of fun. So, and I've also
that is cool.
Mevo is another great app, especially they used to have a free mic you could download on your cell phone. So I was just talking to my cell phone, and it interfaced with the Mevo camera, and it worked really well. So, but
I've seen that at games when I've covered high school tournaments and games. There's some dads that'll prop themselves behind, and they get, you know, and they bring their little camera that they connect, and they got their iPad out and their little mini broadcasting, and they broadcast the games for the parents that can't be there, basically. And it's really neat. I like it when anybody gets involved to any level, you know, as long as it's all in good fun and good sportsmanship, you know, then I'm all for it.
Yeah. So now, because you mentioned your work compels you to travel for some D1 games,
mm-hmm.
and well, how far do you go? Are you mostly regional, or?
I'd say mostly regional.
Okay.
And my main assignments are kind of to cover the Midwest, which is primarily the Big Ten, but not limited to the Big Ten.
Sure.
And then I also, the past couple of years, I've been covering mid majors more,
sure.
and like kind of like the more, I guess, the perennial mid-major powers. And, you know, like in college baseball, that's teams like East Carolina and Cal State Fullerton, Long Beach State, Dallas Baptist, Southern Miss. So, like, schools that you don't normally associate as being strong in college athletics, but they're really good in baseball. So I go, you know, especially early in the season, because the season starts in mid-February. And so me, like all the teams, have to go south, because you're not going to find baseball in Waukesha County or anywhere close to it. And so Arkansas, Texas, Florida, I've been to California, you know, Arizona, all over, really all over. And that's then great. When the teams start to come back, you know, the Big Ten and the other Midwest teams start to come back, I start to travel, but I'll go anywhere as far west as Omaha.
Sure.
And as far east, you know, like Indiana, I'd say, and as far south as, I don't know, southern Illinois. And that's by, you know, that's how far I'll go, like, driving.
Yeah. Sure.
I don't want to, I'll go about 7 to 8 hours in my car.
Now, with the Big Ten expansion, have you had the opportunity to travel to, like, Oregon and Washington and UCLA and USC for games? Has that happened yet?
Not yet, no. And a main reason for that is, you know, at D1 baseball, we have several writers and located at different spots. Yeah, we have a guy in the Los Angeles area that covers.
Especially during the writer's strike, he probably needed the extra work.
Yeah, right.
Didn't help.
But I did see UCLA at Purdue last year. I did attend the Big Ten tournament, which is in Omaha. And that had, did that have all four West Coast teams? I think so. I think that had all four. And that was fun to cover because of those new teams, and they expanded the tournament from 8 teams to 12, so there were more teams, more players, more coaches all involved with that.
Yeah. Who are, like, the best teams in the Big Ten in baseball? I haven't really kept up.
Iowa's usually pretty good. Michigan, they were in the College World Series finals in, 2019. Indiana has a strong team. They always have a good offense. Nebraska's good. All those West Coast teams I mentioned, UCLA, of course, is probably the cream of the crop. They won it all in 2013 as a member of the Pac. At that time, the Pac-10. Trying to think out east. Penn State's been on the rise. Ohio State's had their moments.
Sure.
It feels like I'm missing an obvious one. But Illinois usually be like, they seem to have a Jekyll and Hyde thing where one year they'll be good and one year they're just mediocre.
Like they are in everything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it does feel that way. So
that's funny.
So yeah, not a lot of like huge powerhouses in the Big Ten, but
sure.
I get the weather is such a huge problem in college baseball. Mm-hmm. It's such a natural disadvantage because they started in mid-February, as I mentioned.
Nobody's
and there's some groups trying to push that start date back by. Wow. 2 to 4 weeks, but
like March.
But as you know, like, it could be mid-May before we start seeing like 60 degree weather, you know, where you start feeling like you can go outside in shorts and a
t-shirt. I know,
but
yeah,
I'm doing that when I'm in Texas in February or Florida or wherever. Like,
you're a happy
I can do it down there. Yeah, I am a happy man. You're right.
Well, just so for the Big Ten, is that what they would do? They do like their non-conference games and they would travel to the warmer weather to play or play maybe in these like non-conference tournaments?
That's exactly it. Yeah. There's 14 weekends of the regular season of college baseball.
Sure.
And 10 of those are conference weekends. So yeah, the first four, everybody's down south. The one team that has an advantage in that is Minnesota, because they can play at US Bank Stadium where the Vikings play.
Okay.
And actually, when you mentioned the best Big Ten teams, Minnesota historically has had the most success, the most Big Ten titles, and all that stuff. And
everyone, Dave Winfield was there, or reading about him going there.
Paul Molitor too. So
Molly was another one. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So yeah. They had some very good years there in Minnesota in the 70s.
That's fun. Wow. What's your favorite venue to travel to when you're covering college baseball?
Yeah, the best stadium I've been to is Obrate Stadium. It's the home of the Oklahoma State Cowboys in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely fantastic stadium. It's about as perfect as a college baseball stadium.
What's the seating capacity?
That's a good question. I'm going to guess like 12 to 14.
Okay. Nice. That's a great size.
Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's essentially a really nice minor league ballpark. Yeah.
Do you get to interview like players like before or after games?
Yes. Yep.
Nice.
I do a lot of phone interviews. This time of year, I'm doing like fall reports on a bunch of the teams where I like call up coaches and talk about their team. But yeah, in the spring, then I spend a lot of time on the field, you know, just trying to find what's most interesting at any given point in time and pursuing those stories and sharing them with our readers.
Sure. That's great. Do they ever have you, check out high school games for players that are like promising, like, you know, D1 prospects that are playing locally in the Milwaukee area or maybe somewhere in the region? You don't really cover much high school, right?
Not with my current company, but that my previous company was a showcase organization.
Sure.
And so I was spending a lot more time covering high school athletes than I do now. But I have covered some high school tournaments. It's just ever since I've been with D1 baseball, I'm slowly phasing myself out of the high school tournament scene. And a lot of that has to do with like, I love watching the games, meeting those players, learning about those players, and getting that foundation of knowledge. It's just, I really love the college game. And it's just, as I get older, I feel like I have to kind of narrow my focus. And the college game is just, I've been fascinated by it.
Sure.
Probably since the late 80s. I mean, I think that's probably around when ESPN started to carry college baseball games, like the College World Series and stuff like that. And when those games are on, I never missed it.
You're tuned in.
Yep, exactly.
Sure, sure. What was I asking about college? About I kind of got lost here. But oh, I know. I was going to tell you. One of our softball dads was one of his children. They were looking at colleges in the South, and I think they were in Kentucky. And he was thinking, well, while we're here, because it was a campus visit, just for but he loves, the other daughter's a softball player, and he loves baseball. And so he thought, oh, I'll go check out see if I can check out a softball game and a baseball game. It was at University of Kentucky, and they were both sold out. And then he learned that they had, I think he might have snuck into the baseball one, like standing room or something. But he said there were our season ticket holders for both, and it's those may be tougher tickets to get than, or as tough to get as, say, basketball, which is, Kentucky's one of the fabled programs. And Kentucky football is a good draw. It's SEC, and people come out for that. So I always thought that was amazing and interesting.
So. Yeah, the SEC venues pack their houses, and as do the ACC ones. And even Big 12, I mentioned Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma recently moved to the SEC, but I was at Oklahoma Stadium 2 years ago when they were still in the Big 12. And their fan base, it's so much fun. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mentioned before how the game of college baseball is viewed differently down south, but Kentucky's one of those schools. They got a fantastic head baseball coach, Nick Mangione, and he's turned that program around and made them, a perennial competitor and postseason, and not too long ago that wasn't the case. So
sure.
You really can't go wrong with SEC baseball. So I encourage you too, Dom, when you're on the road you're out on the road in the spring, check those schedules and check out a game, because you'll see for yourself. It's an impressive showing for the game of baseball.
That would be neat. If they're looking for any extra writers, Patrick, keep me in mind. I'm sure there's people. What's that?
I said we'll do, but if I had a dollar for every time someone told me.
I was going to say, you got to have someone that's a real student. I mean, I'm as much a fan, and I guess I could call myself a student, but I would be, I'm one of those guys, I'm really enamored by the pageantry of it and the tradition, and I love baseball on radio. That's my favorite. You could have front row seats for the Brewers behind the dugout. Yeah. I wouldn't turn them down, but I still would rather be listening to it on the radio, sparking the grill up or doing some yard work.
Sure.
But just that, that's always been my favorite. I grew up, my dad was a Tigers fan, so I grew up listening to Ernie Harwell
on
radio. Yep. A lot of my broadcasting style is mimic after him. So when some poor girl strikes out missing, I'm like, I say, stood there like the house on the side of the road.
And I'll just quickly say this. That's what made this season especially challenging with no Bob Uecker. Because, you didn't have that familiar voice to tune into. And nothing against the guys the Brewers have down there now. It'll never be the same.
Sure. Yeah. Boy, talk about someone that was a real patriot for the game. Or just, a passionate.
Every single Wisconsin sports fan that I know.
Next time we meet, I got to tell you my favorite Uecker story and about that all that he accomplished in his career as a player, even though he wasn't a Hall of Famer, all that he contributed to the game is so much. So, but speaking of contributions, thank you for yours, Patrick. We have to wind down now, but I want to thank everybody for listening. And Yeah, right now it's 4-2 Toronto, and I'm thinking that's the fifth inning here in Game 3 of the World Series. So that's you definitely have to tune that in. But yeah, I want to thank Patrick again for your gift of time and sharing your experiences and expertise. And let's do this again soon, especially as when we get to the winter meetings, maybe we could have our own. So I want to thank my producer, the mighty Max Martinson. Again, I want to thank everybody for allowing us to be a part of your listening experience. Please remember always, as we approach Halloween, that safety is everyone's responsibility. Good mental health is everybody's right. Go remila mahagav galer, and see ya!